Welcome to the Lucky Let Court Podcast, a Tennis Now production sponsored by Tennis Express and a proud member of the Tennis Channel Podcast Network. Happy to be with you on Friday, February 10th. I am your host, Chris Otto. Proud to announce, got a very special guest on the podcast today. His name is Alex Kovacevic. The world number 125 is fresh off his first challenger title in Cleveland last week. A former NCAA All-American at Illinois, Kovacevic has been rising up the rankings since turning pro. He was 370 in the world this time last year. Today, 125 after that challenger title. We were paying close attention to him last fall when he made his ATP debut in Seoul, went all the way to the semifinals, knocking off a couple of really talented players en route to that semifinal. So another promising player for Team USA. Very excited to have a chat with Alex Kovacevic, and that is coming up next.
Hey, Alex, really psyched to chat with you today, especially after such a big week that you had in Cleveland. First of all, how are you? Second of all, congrats on winning the title.
Thank you. Yeah, definitely doing pretty well. I'm back home in Boca, back to training already. It's been 2 days since I think I played my last one over in Cleveland, and yeah, just back to it. Next tournament is Delray Beach here in a couple of days. So yeah, thank you.
Ah, killer Delray Beach. Is that Qualies main draw, wild card? What's happening over there?
Well, kind of still waiting to hear. Hoping to possibly get a main draw wild card, but if not, I should be in the, I think, number one or number two out of the qualifying list. So should be sneaking in by tomorrow, maybe the next day.
Sweet. Well, listen, last time we talked, I think, was a year and a half ago. You were still at Illinois, and a lot has happened since then. I don't know where to start, really, but the thing that's been on my mind for a while has been your performance in Seoul last year, your first ATP event, made it to the semifinals, racked up three huge wins, played some big-time tennis. I wanted to circle back and see if you could tell me a little bit of what that experience was like for you, being halfway across the world, playing your first ATP event, and what has it done for your confidence going forward?
Absolutely, yeah. The only reason I had gone to Korea was because I had a pretty rough couple weeks in the U.S. with the U.S. Open situation. I ended up being number one out of the U.S. Open main draw effectively through the wild card challenge for the U.S. So and a couple different just circumstances didn't go my way in the U.S. and kind of wanted to just get a reset mentally. And I remember Chris Eubanks had mentioned to me that he's going to Korea, and I was like, you know what? Let's do it. Why not get out of here for a bit? And I wasn't in a great place mentally before Korea. Had taken some not great losses and just wasn't playing well, wasn't feeling well. And I went over there, and yeah, the first tournament was the 250. I played the qualifying. I lost second round of the qualifying to Jerry, who's obviously a good player. But yeah, I just wasn't feeling great. I remember I found out that I got lucky loser basically right after the match, which was nice. We're going to have to wait and get surprised or anything. But I remember actually writing in my notes on my phone before I played Kismanovic in that first match that I just wasn't in a good place mentally. I didn't feel like I really belonged on the court. Lucky loser is a tricky thing because it's like you have nothing to lose and you're going to play and having fun, but it's hard to feel like you earned your spot as well. Yeah. And so that was tough for me against the guy that's third in the world, and I'm, you know, whatever I was ranked back then. I didn't feel good about where I was. And but then I don't know. I went out there and just played an amazing match. And you know, I remember I talked to my good buddy Alex Benchilla, who actually helped me out in Cleveland this week. He's been always a kind of a mentor for me. He told me maybe you're feeling all these things, but let's see what the conversation is like tomorrow if you beat Kismanovic. And that was kind of how it went. I won that match, and all of a sudden, you know, I'm beaming with confidence, and things got a lot simpler. So kind of kept it going that whole week. From that week, I took a lot of, you know, confidence from my performance. Not as much confidence from the results, because results are kind of, you know, you can play well one day, you can play well you can play not great the next day, but knowing that I can bring that kind of level at some point, is definitely, it helped me, you know, believe that I can do kind of some of the things I'm doing now and hopefully, you know, top 100 and beyond.
Yeah. Super cool. Like, yeah, it must be comforting to recognize what you have in you, that it's there. And yeah, you can take your lumps. Other guys take their lumps as well. Other top players, JJ Wolf, Shelton, you guys have all been up and down. It's a real grind leaving the college game and then going into the pros, doing a lot of different things, travel, whatnot. But to know it's there and to know you can tap into it when you're feeling right must be really an excellent feeling.
Yeah, absolutely. Knowing that the highest level is pretty damn high is a good thing. I think for me, the most important thing has been raising my base level of when I'm not feeling things out there and I'm not, you know, everything's not going, you know, amazing, to still be able to pull out the matches that you usually would lose. That's kind of the next step to being more of a consistent, you know, player in the hopefully top 100 and maybe top 50s here soon. So, yep. And that's what some of the guys like JJ Wolf have done really well, is like, you know, we always knew that JJ could play unbelievable lights out tennis, you know, when he's feeling it, but how is he when he's not on his best day? And that's the question that seems to be answering now in a good way.
Yeah. Well, the numbers say that you've done well in that regard. Actually, 10 out of the last 13 three-setters have gone your way. I mean, you look at the ranking. I think you were about 370 this time last year, and after this challenger title in Cleveland, up to 125. I'm wondering, Alex, does it feel a little bit special with what is going on with the American men? I think there are now, like, I think, gosh, there are like 10 in the top 50, 15 in the top 100. You go into 100 through 200, there's another six more, 21 of you, a lot of the guys you know and have beaten, like Ben Shelton and JJ Wolf. When you see the vibe that's happening with the American men, does that also boost your confidence?
Absolutely. I mean, I think you kind of said it. The biggest thing with that is not as much as their nationality, but the fact that we're super close, and I know a lot of them at a personable level, and you know, we play video games together, we mess around. So cool. It's knowing them as people and knowing that we're just, you know, we're just like each other and stuff is also important, because a lot of people, you know, you look at Novak and some of these guys, it just seemed inhuman. I know these guys pretty well. I know they have flaws. I know they have, just like anybody else. So something like that is actually very inspiring to me. It's when I see them do, like, you know, amazing things out there, it doesn't feel super alien. So it's I mean I was sitting at home watching some of my two best buddies battle it out in the round of 16 of the Australian Open quarterfinal, and then, you know, in the quarterfinal too, Tommy and Ben are both good friends as well. It's just like, whoa. It feels surreal, I'm sure, for me, but even for them, like oh wow. Like, usually the, you know, quarterfinals of Grand Slams used to be dominated by, you know, more European guys and guys that, you know, you don't really connect with well if you're an American tennis player, just because you don't see them very often. A lot of them play tournaments in Europe and, you know, different places. So seeing guys that, you know, I was playing with here in the U.S. last year doing those incredible things is really cool.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to ask you about that. What was it like seeing Ben, JJ, Tommy, Paul? All these, it must, you pretty much answered it for me, but it must have been pretty surreal. But before we went on air, you were saying you had a little bit of a tough month. I guess it was that just about going out, making the trek and not making it through qualies in Melbourne?
Yeah. So going back to some of the circumstantial thing, I had some pretty bad luck last year with a lot of, circumstances, which I try not to, you know, I tried not to have it get to me, but over the course of a year, when it happens over and over, it's very tough to, you know, ignore it. But I was out of a lot of tournaments, being number one out of the tournament. Yeah. And with the way my dad entered the tournaments in Australia, I was entered for Adelaide 250 qualifying and Canberra 100K main draw, both in the same week. If I had signed up for the Canberra qualifying, I wouldn't be able to stay on the Adelaide list. So we kind of took a little bit of a risk there, and I ended up being number one out of both tournaments in the same week. So I didn't play anything the week before Melbourne. So Melbourne qualies was my first match in 2 months, and I had a really good off season. I, hired a coach during the off season that I took with me to Australia. So it was, a pretty big, that's one of the tournaments. It's a pretty big upfront cost. If obviously you make good money at the Australian Open, but it's a pretty big upfront cost to be flying out a coach and a team or whatever to Australia. So, yeah. Going out there and playing my first round on the qualies, it almost didn't even feel like tennis. I was super nervous. A lot of things were heightened. I didn't play for a while. So, feeling like, I didn't have a match day for a while and that's a big thing. And, so I can only think, all I could think about when I got back home was, hey, what if I had, even went and lost the match, somewhere else before I played Australian Open qualies, and, how that could have possibly changed things, and a lot of what if scenarios. And then, seeing the guys do super well, it hurt a little bit I wouldn't say it hurt. It was a little frustrating, but it was also super, super inspiring to know that, like, hey, these guys I was competing with last year, and they're right there with the best in the world. So I don't know. There was two ways to look at it. I definitely, like I said, super inspiring to see all the Americans do well at Australian Open. Gives me hope for myself.
I totally get it. I mean, you guys love each other, but you burn to outpace one another. I think that's the reason it's going so well for the Americans, right? But it sounds like even though it was a negative experience for you, you definitely made the trip to Australia. You got a feel for maybe what you need to do in future years, because that's a crazy journey, right? And so I guess you figured out a little bit of the intricacies and the complicated nature of playing and winning in Australia, and that's something you can take with you next year.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in the moment, it was very hard to find any positives from the whole situation in Australia with, entries and not getting into tournaments and all that. But I guess it was a bit of a learning experience. And I think in hindsight, it's kind of, you can kind of see a little bit more of the positives. Like now that I, won the Challenger last week, who knows if that would have happened if I had, won even a round in qualifying in Australia and then went home. Like, you never know with tennis. And, it's a weird sport. Random things happen. You just got to keep plugging along and hope for the best. And like I said, super inspiring to see a lot of the Americans do well. And that kind of keeps you going a little bit more than you usually would. Cause you're like, wow, it might really be, right there. So, it's cool.
Cool. And you mentioned the coach that you brought along. Are you referring to Dean Goldfein?
Not Dean. Well, so Dean is basically like call him my master coach. Okay. He's a consulting coach. He helps me and Ben both. But he is, he can't travel everywhere. So I hired basically a travel coach. His name's Brian Garber to help me out when I'm on the road. And he lives in Boca Raton where I've been training. And so he helps me when I'm home as well. And Dean can't make it from Orlando. So, both of them, we work together and are helping me out right now. And it's been great.
Oh, sweet. And you and Ben are pretty close, or is he one of the guys you're closer with in terms of the American guys?
Absolutely. I mean, Ben's a little bit younger than me. So, he's only really been on tour for not even a year, I would say. So, we're good friends, but we're just starting on the journey together, and it's really cool. Ben's a great friend. JJ's a great friend. Tommy's a great friend. Keegan Smith. All the American guys are homies. So,
Alex, can you tell me a little bit about what is like switching out of NCAA tennis to the pros? What are some of the challenges you faced and you kind of had to kind of grow through in these last 18 months?
I think the first thing is managing being on tour. I didn't really have a moment where I really realized, okay, now I'm going to be a pro tennis player. And I didn't realize exactly what that entailed. A big part of it was, when I first got out to start playing tournaments, I, I wanted to win every single match, and I stressed myself out about it, and I really want to do well every single week. And yet the biggest thing I realize, and it's helped me now, is that it's a long, long journey, and the year is very long, especially, I mean, our sport especially shouldn't probably be as long as it is, but there's plenty of opportunity everywhere, and you don't really need to stress yourself out about every single week. It's easy to fall into that trap because in college, you know, the best players in college and what you strive to be is almost, they're basically almost undefeated.
Yeah.
In my 2020-21 season, me and JJ were, I mean, JJ was undefeated. I lost one match the whole year when we played each other, and it was by the end of the year. So, you know, in college, I wouldn't say it's easy to not lose the match. It's very tough to do that. But the best players, that's kind of the goal, is just, you know, go out there and win every single match for your team. In pro tennis, that's just, unless you're Novak, you can't really win every week, even if you're some of the best in the world, and you have to get kind of used to losing every week. And that was, for me, I'm a player that hates losing a lot more than I love winning. And so losing every week's not fun. And that's, I guess, yeah, those kind of things are very important for people transitioning. I think another thing is getting used to not being around family and friends a lot. Can be tough, and it can be tough when you first start out, because, you know, when you're around your family and friends and then you kind of rip the Band-Aid, it's a lot tougher than when you're already on the road and you know, kind of away from the family. So it's interesting, when I came back for preseason and then I left again, I felt sad, pretty sad. But yeah, when you're on the road for a long period of time, you almost like get used to not seeing people, and it's a little easier to manage.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, that's a big thing as well. I'm pretty good with that now. But starting out was definitely tough. You have to realize what you're getting into a little bit, and that, you know, your life's not going to be, you're not going to be able to spend much time with loved ones. I mean, unless you take them on the road with you, but that's rare, and it probably, you know, costs a lot more financially. If you have the money, then you can take your, you know, friends, family on the road. But yeah.
And along the same lines of questioning, what are some of the things maybe that you thought like, oh, cool, this holds up against the pros, you know, in the matches you were able to win in Seoul? Was there anything, or just in general, is there anything you were maybe like surprised at how well it's going? Like, you know, the serve is working better than you thought against this type of competition, the backhand, or just curious about that?
Yeah, I would say my serve is definitely my most effective shot. And I don't know if I'd say I'm surprised that it does well against competition. I just, even from when I first started on the pro tour, I realized like, hey, these are my weapons. This is what works. I think I always try to play, even when I was a junior, I think, as a pro style game or a pretty big game. I always tell people a lot of the reason I had the confidence when I came into college, well, not came into college, but when I was playing college tennis and starting to beat really good players, I wasn't a great junior, and a lot of my confidence came from simple things like knowing that if I hit certain shots on the court out there and certain, you know, patterns, certain things I do on the court, that, you know, it would work against my little sister, and it would also work against Rafa Nadal. Like, if I hit a 136 mile an hour serve on the line wide, and then I hit a forehand to the other side of the court, that's going to win the point against anybody for me. So those kind of things, that's how I have confidence in my game that I can play against anyone. That also, in the same way, it could makes you feel like you could possibly lose, you know, to anybody, because, you know, you miss a certain shot, you miss that shot against anybody. But I would say I was never surprised by anything being super effective in the pros because of that. But I will say, you know, looking at video back from my college days, looking for a video from when I first started on the tour, you don't really notice it when you're necessarily, you know, playing on the tour, but you look back and you're like, wow, you know, I improved this so much, I improved that so much. For me, looking back at, you know, 3 years ago today, some of my videos, I look much slower than I do now. My serve looks a little goofier back then. I cleaned a lot of things up. So just naturally, without even knowing, like, you're improving some things as you, you know, progress on the pro tour, and the training on the pro tour, I would say, is, if you know what you're doing, it's a lot more effective than than some of that stuff in college. Doesn't mean college is a bad pathway at all. There's a lot of good in that. And as a young kid, you probably won't be training the same way as someone on the pro tour anyway. So, yeah.
Very cool. And two last questions for you, Alex. Has this last year, year and a half of being on the tour, has it changed your perception of what's possible for your career?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, if you told me a little while ago, like, you know, when I first graduated college, that within a year and a half I'd be at 125 in the world, I wouldn't say you're crazy, but I would, you know, take that deal in a heartbeat. But being on the pro tour and being at 160 in the world, being at 150 in the world, you think from the outside, when you look at someone that's at that ranking, you might, as you know, a college tennis player, you might think, oh wow, like, he's got it all figured out. Like, what a life, you know? And being at 150, 160 in the world, you realize, like, hey, you know, I got here. Is this all I want? No, you want to keep pushing. And I quickly realized that I don't think that'll ever change. So as much as I'm climbing the ranks and I'm happy about it, there hasn't been yet a point where I've been even remotely satisfied. And that in itself, that, you know, drive to want to do more has made me believe that, you know, I'll keep going higher because, yeah, like I said, I'm definitely not content in any way and definitely not satisfied. And then also pair that with some of the confidence I got from beating guys that are, you know, top 50 in the world and winning, you know, Challenger last week. Like, I definitely think I can do it. So, yeah.
Killer. That's what we like to hear, Alex. Yeah. I like that a lot. And then that segues to my final question for you today. What are you planning to do for the rest of the season? Do you have your sights set on anything specific? Do you just want to get into more tour level events, maybe crack the main draw of a slam, or is it something more vague that you're seeking to achieve?
Yeah, no, my short-term goal right now would be to be main draw of the French Open. So I got a good amount of tournaments coming up that I have a chance to do that. I don't have that many. I don't really have many points at all actually to defend until I think May, maybe, really. So I think I have a good shot at doing that. And that's the goal, yeah. I mean, top 100 is always a huge milestone for any tennis player. Can't take that away from anybody that makes it there. And, you know, that since you're a kid, that's kind of what you dream about, is being a top 100 tennis player in the world. Doesn't mean you'll be satisfied when you get there. Just means, you know, that'll be one thing I can check off the box, and it'll be cool.
Great. And you mentioned Delray Beach. After that, are you going to head out to Indian Wells for the first time and maybe look for a wild card there or play qualies? There's also a challenger out there, I believe, the week before, right?
So I actually did play Indian Wells last year with a wild card or something, I think, during the COVID weird. Yeah, but I didn't do well. I lost a good buddy, Emilio Gomez, pretty bad. He whooped me over there. But I head to, after Delray Beach, I head to Mexico for Monterey Challenger, and then right after that, Acapulco 500 qualifying. From there, I go straight to Indian Wells and then Miami. It'd be nice to get, you know, a main draw wild card for anything in the U.S. related. I should be comfortably in qualifying of Indian Wells and Miami, but to be a main draw would be awesome. I don't know if there's a possibility of that, but if, yeah, I mean, I'd love the opportunity for sure.
Sounds good. And then you'll head out to the clay a little bit and spend maybe a longer time in Europe than you ever have before, if I'm not mistaken?
Yeah, I honestly don't even really know my schedule after that. I mean, I assume so. I definitely want to get some reps on clay. I haven't played much on clay at all in the last, never really. I grew up in New York City and then played a little bit on green clay in Florida before college, but otherwise I think I played like one pro match on red clay ever in my life. And so definitely a part of my game that I want to start to explore and develop. There's a couple things I do in my game that I think would translate well to red clay, but I just haven't really spent much time on it. So I'm excited kind of for that challenge.
Cool. That sounds great. Well, look forward to seeing what you could do at Delray Beach, and I will certainly see you in person at Indian Wells. Looking forward to that as well. And Alex, man, great job climbing the rankings so quickly, and I really appreciate your time today. Best of luck going forward.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Chris.
Thanks, Alex.
This edition of the Lucky Let Cord podcast is a wrap. Special thanks to Alex Kovacevic for joining us today. That was pretty awesome, learning a little bit more about where he's been coming from in these last few years. Keep it tuned to www.tennisnow.com. We're going to put a feature up on Alex, and also keep it tuned to the ATP Tour over the next few months. Let's see if Kovacevic can join the 15 other Americans in the ATP's top 100. Thanks for listening to this edition of the podcast. You can always find us on social at facebook.com/tennisnow or on Twitter at @tennis_now. And of course, we love it if you rate, review, and subscribe to this podcast. Find us on Apple Podcasts. Type in Lucky Let Cord Podcast in your search engine, and voila, you're listening, you're rating, you're reviewing. It all means a lot to us. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks again to Alex, and you guys enjoy the week. We'll see you soon on the podcast.